good show for you tonight. Good show, good show. I just want to say, let's go! Yeah! Hey friends, hello and welcome to Unbought and Unbossed. This is show number 131. Today is July 22nd, 2009. Unbought and Unbossed is an independent voice dedicated to presenting and discussing the political and social issues most relevant to Canadian citizens. This show contends that 9/11 is Canada's single most important issue because the self-inflicted attacks of 9/11 are being used as the justification for the current overthrow of our democratic and sovereign nationhood, turning Canada into a corporate-driven plutocracy. The official story of the 9/11 terror attacks and the ensuing war of terror are deeply troubling and are at the forefront of this radio program. I strongly encourage listeners to question what you think you know about today's world events and to analyze the motives behind our traditional news sources. Each week, new segments of Unbought and Unbossed offer further evidence for these incredible claims, which are either omitted or distorted by the mainstream corporate media. Turn your television off. You are being lied to and conditioned to accept this madness as our inevitable future. We must work to return the future of the human race to its rightful owners. That's you. Our ignore it and maybe it will go away on its own mentality is killing us. It has to end now. It is high time to wake up and to educate, to learn to work together, and to find the courage to act on our love for one another. However, freedom is at stake in this battle for truth and accountability. The prize is nothing less than the health of our collective human soul. Hey, the revolution has begun. I suggest you find your role.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Very nice, very nice. That is Bruce Coburn, as always, with Action Speak Louder. We're going to be hearing from DJ Shadow next, and then Ashley McIsaac. What do I have for you folks tonight? I've been talking about it for a long time. Tonight is the night. I have a telephone interview with National Post journalist Jonathan Kay. He is writing a book on the 9/11 truth movement. It'll be due out, I'm not too sure, sometime next year. It is called Among the Truthers, Alternate Theories of 9/11 and the People Who Believe Them. Well, that means you and I, doesn't it now? Jonathan Kay has done that one other interview that I'm aware of with a truther. That was Kevin Barrett in the States. As far as I know, this might be a little bit of Canadian history. This is likely the first time that the official story of what happened on 9/11 is being defended in the public. When I first got on air, for maybe a good year, I attempted to get politicians and or media personalities on this show to address some of the many problems in the official story of 9/11. Well, tonight is the night. Jonathan Kay is the man. I've got a bio for him. This comes from the nationalpost.com columnist piece. So this is his biography. Jonathan Kay is comment pages editor of the National Post. In addition, he is a columnist for the National Post op-ed page, as well as a regular contributor to Contemporary Magazine and the New York Post. His freelance articles have appeared in Harper's, The New Yorker, The New York Times, and the International Herald Tribune, as well as the Los Angeles Times. Big, big corporate media is there, aren't they? Okay, in April 2002, he was awarded Canada's National Newspaper Award for Critical Writing. In 2004, he was awarded the National Newspaper Award for Editorial Writing. Jonathan was born and raised in Montreal. He graduated from McGill University in 92 with a bachelor's degree in metallurgical engineering, as well as economics and Japanese language. Following short employment stints in Australia and Japan, Jonathan returned to McGill's engineering department as a computer programmer and postgraduate student. Receiving a master's degree in metallurgical engineering in 94. Jonathan then studied at Yale Law School, where he received his law degree in 97. Before joining the National Post, Jonathan worked as a lawyer in New York City. During this time, his practice area consisted primarily of U.S. tax analysis of international corporate transactions. Jonathan became a member of the New York Bar in 98. Okay, last week I read the article that Jonathan Kay wrote concerning Richard Gage, the architect who founded Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. The article was called "An Evening in Montreal with Richard Gage, 9/11 Truth Movement Prophet Extraordinaire." So, as I told you last week, I would like to get further analysis on some of those topics that were brought up in that. Moving on to Kevin Barrett, I listened to that interview rather closely, and I've got a bunch of questions that were generated from there. So those two pieces, as well as his latest, or well, perhaps his first book, are going to be the topic of discussion. Now, I want to read you something that Kevin Barrett wrote in just prior to the interview, which was a few weeks back with Jonathan Kay. Okay, so quoting Kevin Barrett, "How could an intelligent journalist seriously investigate 9/11 and not quickly realize that 9/11 truth seekers have a point? Or is he mainly investigating the truth movement as a social phenomenon without regard to the truthfulness of its claims?" I agree with him, says Kevin, that the truth movement is a noteworthy social phenomenon worthy of investigation. But is it really possible to study a movement based on a set of empirical claims without engaging in any way with those claims? Doesn't this sound like a recipe for yet another deceptive ad hominem attack, proving once again that since nobody can refute the truther's arguments, the only possible response is to change the subject and insult the messenger? Well, let's see what happens. As I told you, I paid attention to that Kevin Barrett piece, and what I've decided is that I am not going to be making any unconfirmed assumptions about what happened on 9/11. The truth movement that I am a part of demand a new investigation into 9/11 because the official story can be proven to be a lie in most every aspect of its explanation. Personally, myself, I have never claimed to know exactly what happened on 9/11. Nor do I know of a truther who claims to. So, the phone is ringing. Maybe that is Jonathan now. Let's find out. CHLY, you're on the air. This is Jonathan. I'm sorry. Welcome to CHLY. Who's this?
It's John Kay.
Jonathan Kay, thank you very much for calling me up, buddy.
No problem.
Yeah. I just read your bio that is found on the National Post to learn a little bit about you, and then I was read a quote by Kevin Barrett asking, how is it that an intelligent journalist can study 9/11 and not quickly realize that 9/11 truthers have a point? Do we have a point just right off the bat, or are we?
I just can't get my head around the possibility of any kind of 9/11 truth conspiracy being true. And I've said this, I told this to Kevin Barrett. I've said, as a journalist, I've studied, these political figures, military figures. They are so often incompetent. I can't imagine them ever being able to pull anything like this off.
Okay, very nice. So that falls into the category of the incompetence theorist.
That's a sufficient theory to dismiss the idea that they could do this.
Okay.
I was telling Kevin Barrett, Paul Wolfowitz couldn't even conspire to get his girlfriend a job at the World Bank.
Yeah.
people are incompetent, usually.
Okay. Very well, perhaps we'll get back to that. Where I would like to start with is talking about your new book, Among the Truthers, Alternate Theories of 9/11, and the People Who Believe Them. Can you tell us a little bit about that? For example, when do you hope to have it published?
Well, I hope to have it published next year. And there's been a lot of interest in it. What people on both sides.
Okay.
And the main thrust of the book, the first thing I decided was that, well, at first I thought, I'll look into this, and if I don't believe it, I'll debunk it. And then I looked out, and there's all kinds of books available, not just books, but websites, magazine articles, available on both sides,
okay,
by truthers, by people who aren't truthers. And the debate is a really well-developed thing. And the more I studied it, the more I realized I didn't have anything new to contribute to the debate about whether the 9/11 truth movement was on something.
Right.
What I did think I could contribute as a reporter is to talk a little bit about the truth movement itself, who the people are, why they believe what they believe, what their best arguments are, how they've used the internet to organize, and also just introduce the broad public to people like David Ray Griffin, people like Michael Rupert. These are people who have written some pretty interesting books, and there's a lot of people just who have never heard of them. And that was one of my goals.
Well, very nice. If you can get more people to read David Ray Griffin publications, you would certainly being a great help on behalf of the truthers. Very nice. So can you tell me who exactly are the people, or I'm going to guess that there's going to be different levels of how you're going to break it down, but can you tell us a little bit about the people that do not believe the official story of 9/11?
Well, I think, you've probably seen the same survey data I've seen. I think the last survey of the United States was 2006? And I think you have basically a quarter or a third of the U.S. population, it's probably the numbers are probably similar in Canada, who question the official theory of 9/11.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'm sorry, I think it's a little over a third is what those were.
Okay. So, probably the rest of society believes the official version, as they believe the official version of most things. But the people who are members of the 9/11 truth movement, it's an interesting mix of people. It tends to be fairly well-educated, very web-savvy people.
Okay.
Because the 9/11 truth movement really took root on the web.
Yes, it did.
That's one of the interesting things about the phenomenon. And you have a lot of college students. Like any political movement with a technical side, mm-hmm, I guess you could call it. Like all sorts of political movements, very popular on college campuses. But you also see a lot of middle-aged people who are involved.
Mm-hmm.
And, you look at people like David Ray Griffin, Michael Kiefer in Canada, very interesting guy, University of Guelph, I interviewed. A lot of the people who I just started emailing with back and forth after I wrote some of my articles. I noticed there was a lot of mid-career, middle-aged, engineers, academics. That's one of the things that interested me,
mm-hmm,
especially when I went to see Richard Gage, who has been a practicing architect for 20 years.
Yeah.
And
I'm sorry, carry on.
He personifies to me a guy who's very, very moderate guy. Well, more than moderate, he described himself as being extremely patriotic in a very conventional way before he became a member of the Truth Movement in 2006. And that's one of the things that interested me about the phenomenon is that these were quote unquote ordinary people.
Mm-hmm.
When I was younger and people mentioned the idea of a conspiracy theorist, I had the traditional stereotype in mind, which is someone who is socially maladjusted, who is extremely radicalized in their politics.
Wow. I think that the corporate media has done a very good job in making sure that that is the connotation that goes along with that phrase. It's a knee-jerk reaction, and they've been very successful in, painting with a broad stroke, as a good way to ignore the actual issues and specifics of whatever the crime may have been.
Yeah, that's true, but although to be fair, there are also, I mean, you know, the term conspiracy theory is very broad. It covers everything from people who have extremely mainstream, legitimate theories of the JFK assassination, for instance, to people who are on the farthest fringes of society who have really hateful views, like Holocaust deniers and stuff like that. So, you know, it is true that there are some quote-unquote conspiracy theorists who really do answer to that socially marginal description.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you go to really hateful conspiracy theorists.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't really consider those conspiracy theories myself. They're just lumped into, you know, kind of the loony wacko, you know, which is what is intended by, you know, the Foxes and the other, you know, very obvious propaganda corporations.
Yeah, it's a very broad term. I mean, conspiracy theory itself is a problematic term. David Ray Griffin, in his books, he's talked a little bit about that term, and he's actually indicated that properly contextualized, the term conspiracy theorist could apply to people. And he's also said that the official version is a conspiracy theory too, right?
Because
you're theorizing about a conspiracy perpetrated by 19 hijackers and their supporters in Afghanistan and Europe.
Yeah, thank you. Quite often, as a truther, when they say, the conspiracy theory thing, when I mention 9/11, I say, which one? Because, you know, the official stories, you know, a doozy of a conspiracy as well.
And so, you know, if you are going to look at conspiracy theory in its sort of broadest sense, you would have to include the official theory if you use that extremely broad definition.
Okay, for myself, I know of only one alternate theory, and that is what I believe, and probably the majority of truthers believe, is that by looking at the facts as best as we can ascertain them right now, it was an inside job by, not exactly sure, levels within the government, within the Pentagon, perhaps Wall Street, you know, that it was an inside job. And I'm wondering, in your book, are you going to be including theories other than that one? Because that is the only conspiracy theory to do with 9/11 and the truth movement. I hope that, you know, you're not going to include, you know, far out ones that, you know, could very well likely have been, you know, basically, you know, put out purposeful disinformation.
Yeah, that's interesting to see that. I make it very clear in my writing and in my interviews that the 9/11 truth movement has been around for long enough that it has, like any other ideological movement, generated what can be called mainstream dogmas. So a mainstream 9/11 truther, to use the term truther, will have doubts about how the World Trade Center fell. He or she may or may not believe the Pentagon was hit by a missile. They will have a lot of questions about NORAD's response on the morning of 9/11.
Or lack of response.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you and probably your listeners are familiar with the dozen or so sort of major subtopics that they will be interested in.
Hmm.
And that will, in my experience, that covers sort of 80 or 90% of people who are in the truth movement.
Okay.
And then if you go beyond that, you go beyond the quote-unquote mainstream 9/11 truth movement, and you get into very esoteric theories, which are, many of them are quite frankly bizarre. The idea that there were no planes or that...
interesting ones, but I do want to make clear that that is not common. You know, I receive dozens of emails a day through the community that I'm involved in, and none of them follow that 20%, if that's the number you gave.
No, I agree with you there, because, you know, as you say, one good way you can tell what people think, or you can get a good representative sample of a particular movement, in this case the 9/11 truth movement, is check your email. And the reason I decided to write this book, was based on the huge email response I got to a column I wrote way back, I guess, late 2008. And I noticed that the vast majority of the people who were emailing me who had studied the subject were all clustered around a particular theory which involved skepticism, as I said, about the World Trade Center, how it fell, and the possible use of thermite.
I don't know if it's possible. I don't think that's debatable, that thermite was found and and has been analyzed as such. That's not a theory. That's a fact as far as I'm believe.
But yeah. But in terms of in terms of the proportion of people who believe what,
right?
I do intend to make it clear that this is what the mainstream 9/11 truth movement believes.
Yeah.
But I will mention that there are outliers who have these what I consider fairly bizarre theories.
Sure.
I've actually tried to interview one of them, one or two of them, but without success. There's one guy who you may be familiar with named, I think he goes by Ace Baker on his blog.
No, as a matter of fact, I'm not familiar with that name.
He's a proponent of the idea that there were no planes used on 9/11.
Okay.
Which to me just seems weird. I've tried to interview him. I haven't been successful. And there's some other people with some esoteric theories that I've tried to interview.
Yeah.
But I don't think it would be fair to my readers if I didn't make it clear that these people are outliers within the truth movement.
Yeah, that they don't follow. Certainly, you know, if you look at the huge collection of published literature, I'm not aware of any that follows the fringe. So, you know, as long as you're clear that that is the fringe,
Yes, then I
don't have a problem with that. I'm hoping that we can talk a little bit about the Richard Gage piece. I read that last week on the show, and it brought up many tasty pieces that I wanted to maybe get further clarification from you by.
Sure.
First off, you say that you have gone to quite a few different truth events and listened to different speakers. Can you tell us some of the different events that you've taken in?
Sure. Well, there was the event in Montreal. The first event I went to was, I think it was November 2008. That was Michael Kiefer.
Okay.
And I never know how to pronounce his name correctly.
Okay, Dooney?
Paul Zaremka.
Oh, yes.
And that was good. I went to an event in Waterloo. Which university was that? I guess it was the University of Waterloo.
Yeah, that's going to be my guess, yeah.
Yeah, and that actually was an interesting event because it was a 9/11 truth event. However, they brought in someone who was a 9/11 truth skeptic.
Interesting.
A guy by the name of Ron Craig.
Okay.
Who gave it was actually very interesting because there was several hundred people there.
Uh-huh.
I guess there were 200 or 300 people there. But the main speaker was preaching against the 9/11 truth movement. He was someone who had some expertise in explosives, and he was explaining why he didn't think it could work.
Right.
Why the 9/11 truth theories had validity.
Huh.
But at that event, I met some of the student leaders who are active.
Sure.
A guy by the name of Adam Parrott, who I interviewed. All these events led to me meeting all sorts of people who I ended up interviewing, and then they put me on to other people.
Okay.
And then there was a very interesting event. It was a small event, but it was very interesting. It was a very grassroots event. It was in Walkerton, Ontario.
Okay, yeah.
And that
was with Tony Hall, I believe?
Tony Hall gave a long presentation. I think his name was Steve McQueen.
That's right. No, Graham McQueen.
Graham McQueen, excuse me. I think the actor, Steve McQueen. Graham McQueen, and he gave a really, really interesting presentation. He's a very polished speaker.
Well, they're both professional professors. I mean, they're... Yeah.
Yes. Different speaking styles, and very interesting to listen to. But, you know, I mean, these events are interesting, but for me, the main value comes in talking to people one-on-one. So after I saw Richard Gage speak in Montreal... I went out to interview him in California and just speak with him one-on-one.
Very nice.
Which is, to me, more valuable because then we're not just talking about 9/11. I can talk to him about, you know, his career, some of the sacrifices he's made for the 9/11 truth movement because, you know, he's made no secret of the fact that, like a lot of prominent 9/11 truth movement leaders,
mm-hmm.
he has had to make sacrifices, financial and otherwise, to pursue this. Kevin Barrett, I interviewed. A guy by the name of Barry Zwicker, you might know, here in Toronto.
Sure do. He was the first person to show serious flaws in the story on network television.
I mean, maybe not network. Yeah. It was a smaller network anyways. But, yeah, he was the first journalist in the world to show some of the problems in the story.
Yeah, and a really nice, like, well, to be honest, like most of the 9/11 Truth Movement leaders I've met, a really nice guy. One of the things that's impressed me about the Truth Movement is when you sit down with people, you know, on the web, people have a very combative posture, right, because they're trying to prove their point, and especially in the 9/11 Truth Movement, they feel they've been marginalized and ignored by the mainstream media.
Yes.
But, you know, when you sit down and talk to them in a reasonable way, people have been friendly, and we've had really good, candid conversations. Well, Barry Zwicker, that was an example of that.
Yeah, he's a great fellow. Are you familiar with the term civil informationing?
Excuse me, civil informationing?
Correct.
I'm not familiar with that term.
Okay, well, that's come out of the Truth Movement. There's, Doug in Edmonton, Wayne in Fraser Valley, Robin Horden, the ex-pilot in traffic control out of the Washington State. They are working on civil informationing being, well, it's your civic duty to, you know, when there's a problem as big as, you know, false flag operations on our own soil, as well as attempting to inform people in the most civil manner possible, because, you know, a fellow screaming on the soapbox on the corner is more than likely going to get people shaking their heads going, you know, that guy's a little funny, versus, you know, just as if you're speaking to your parents, you know, or, you know, just coming across in the most human and I guess, loving way to say, you know, I've got some really important information, and I would love to share it with you. And, you know, it usually includes giving out DVD, documentaries, literature, things like that. So civil informationing is something pretty neat, and it's, you know, it's a far change from the protest movements that we think of when we think of the 60s or the civil rights. It's much different. It's a more mature, perhaps times are more drastic. If there's a larger agenda, New World Order ideas, we're all in the same boat here. You know, it's not a race issue anymore. It's kind of a class issue. You know, if you're middle class or lower class, we better start binding together and informing ourselves of what's going on behind the scenes, because there's a lot going on behind the scenes that doesn't make the newspapers and is what most people have come to believe.
Well, if I could just jump in there, what you were talking about, civil information, I wasn't familiar with that subject, but there's one really interesting guy I spoke with who spoke to that general theme, and that was a guy by the name of Ken Jenkins in the San Francisco area, who has sort of turned himself into an expert on the communication of 9/11 truth material to people who aren't truthers.
Okay.
And has actually written a very interesting article about it. And one of the things he emphasized is that you have to talk to people to find out where their mind is at before you decide on your own strategy.
There you go.
For persuading them, because and you also have to know when to stop talking to them, because as with any form of political persuasion or indoctrination, if a person just isn't interested, they're not interested, and it can get annoying. And that's, you know, that is what leads to these characters you have of people who become obsessed with 9/11 truth.
And it's just likely going to turn those people off, and then, you know, the next time they hear something about 9/11, they're going to remember that, you know, that funny person, that odd person, or that scary person, you know, whatever.
Well, it becomes a social stereotype.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Like, in any movement, you get people like that. Although, like I said, one of the things that interested me about this movement is, you know, most of the people I met aren't like that at all. You know, this guy, Michael Kiefer, I interviewed here in Toronto, you know, we spent most of our interview talking about stuff that had nothing to do with 9/11 truth. He's an expert. He's an academic expert in Shakespeare and Marlowe and Descartes. And
that's right, yeah.
We talked about stuff like that, which, I mean, was one of the most interesting aspects about it, because if you just base your image of 9/11 truthers based on the email you get, you might think these guys think about this stuff 24/7, because that's the only window you have into their mind is these emails that you're exchanging with them.
Mm-hmm.
But when you meet them in person, it's not true at all. They're, you know, they're well-rounded people.
Sure.
They
there is a something that happens when you start to realize that, you know, there are a lot of flaws in the story, and many people will say that they spent a tremendous amount of time on the internet and that they just were they couldn't get off it, that it was so, the possibilities were so devastatingly frightening that they just had to stay on that internet for days or weeks, pretty much, you know, 7/24. That seems to be a very popular thing for, you know, new people that, you know, weren't familiar with, you know, American foreign policy or, you know, that those subjects.
Yes, like Rob Balsamo is an example of that. He's, as you probably know, he's the leader of pilots for 9/11 Truth.
That's right.
And, you know, a lot of people, especially people sometimes they'll watch Loose Change or another 9/11 Truth video, and all of a sudden the floodgates open, and as you say, they're just, they become addicted to the web.
Yeah.
That's what the story is.
Hey, I want to say something that, I've been doing this show for about 2.5 years. Some people are calling it the only 9/11 Truth radio show in Canada, certainly a weekly one. There's a couple different, podcasts, but, this seems to be the only one, so I'm told. I'm not aware of another. And for the first year and a bit, I did my best to get a politician or a media personality, someone to come on and talk about some of the problems in the official story, which we haven't really gotten into too much yet. However, I do want to congratulate you. You are the first, and I want to acknowledge that and thank you for doing so.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you one of the reasons that I'm perfectly willing to do this is, unlike a lot of people who are not 9/11 truthers, because I should emphasize, I'm not a member of the 9/11 truth movement. I don't believe, you know, I am a believer in the official story. However, I've researched the 9/11 truth movement enough to know that it is not, contrary to popular belief, it is not in any way a hateful movement. I think one of the big PR problems the 9/11 truth movement had right from the get-go is that in some people's minds it became associated with anti-Semitism, because we heard this story which came out of the Middle East about, oh, wasn't it true that 4,000 Jews didn't show up on 9/11? I believe that story was originally sourced to a Hezbollah source, or, and it was a Lebanese source. And regardless, for many people this was the only factoid they thought of when they thought of the 9/11 truth movement, and they thought of it as some kind of anti-Semitic crackpot type thing. One thing I discovered is, you know, I've interviewed dozens of truthers. I can honestly say there's not a single North American truther whom I have interviewed struck me in any way as anti-Semitic or racist or hateful in any way.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'd say the opposite. They believe that their movement is based on opposition to a U.S. government that itself has a racist or at least an imperialist agenda.
Mm-hmm.
If I thought the 9/11 truth movement had any kind of racist or anti-Semitic or hateful agenda, I wouldn't participate in this kind of media thing.
Mm-hmm.
As it is, I just happen to think 9/11 truth movement, I believe their theories are wrong, but I don't see any sort of hateful animus behind it, which is why I'm willing to engage in reasonable debate.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to butt in here. You said that you believe that our theories are wrong, and I want to reiterate that it's not so much theory as a fact, as close as we can come to, you know, either through, you know, the commission itself was honest in some areas. The media has been, you know, I mean, there are many known facts about that day, you know, that the hole in the Pentagon was, you know, probably not more than 20 feet wide. You know, that's not really a theory. So I think we need to be careful about, you know, calling a fact a theory, you know, because it's very confusing and deceptive as well. I don't know if you agree with me on that.
I know that a lot of your listeners and probably you will think I'm naive, but you know, I read the 9/11 Commission report, and then I read the book by the two heads of the report.
Yeah, Cain and Hamilton.
I'm sorry?
Cain and Hamilton.
Exactly, and the name of their book escapes me right now. But it was, yeah, I mean, it was basically talking about the work they'd done. And I read a few other books, and the more I read these official investigations, the more it becomes clear that any kind of conspiracy to obscure the truth, to promote an official account of 9/11, which is wrong, would just involve so many people. It would not only involve all the dozens or hundreds of people who would presumably have to be involved in the actual inside job itself.
Yeah.
It would require hundreds of people involved in the cover-up, you know, the coercion or the bribery or the intimidation of hundreds or thousands of journalists or official investigators. I don't know how well, maybe you could tell me.
Sure, I will.
How do you think this all could be organized? All of these people, all on message.
The way, as far as I understand, power is shaped in a pyramid. And in the military, you don't know what is in the level above you, and you don't know what's in the level below you. It's compartmentalized. And that is, you know, a very efficient way to do something, but it's also very efficient to keep everyone blind to what they're doing in the next office over. You know, so if it's broken up between, you know, tens or dozens of offices or departments, no one is any wiser, and they don't have, you know, the single smoking gun themselves. They just have something that's really odd. So I believe that it's very easy to set up a power structure, and I believe that that's the way power structures are set up. You know, whether it's the corporate office, you know, yourself, you're a fairly senior editor, or at least you're working your way up, and you know, you're not, perhaps you're, well, I doubt you're privy to what's going on in the boardroom, and likewise, you know, the guys on the front line, you know, running the paper machines, you know, you do your job and someone else does the other job.
That's true, but we do live in a society where, you know, it doesn't matter who you are. People talk. Look, take Lehman Brothers. I mean, Lehman Brothers, the ultimate New York financial hierarchy, where the people on the 31st floor at Lehman Brothers, I mean, they were the bosses. They controlled everything. In fact, the big man at Lehman Brothers, no one ever saw him. And just today on National Public Radio, I was listening to an interview with a guy who was fairly senior, who has just written a book about how Lehman Brothers collapsed. And this was a guy who, you know, he was part of the elite at Lehman Brothers and made millions of dollars, but he just got guilty and sick of what he had done, and he wanted America to hear the story about how a bunch of people at Lehman Brothers lost billions of dollars, so he wrote a book about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the truth and the guilt were gnawing away at him. And that's what eventually happens whenever you have any sort of
I don't think so. I believe that you've put your time in. There's no way you're going to chime up about corruption if it means your career. You know, that doesn't wash for me personally. So, but let's kind of step into maybe a new idea. Why haven't corporate journalists covered the info of the truthers and the researchers and the material they've exposed? You know, yourself, you've written a fairly... quite a fair, as far as, you know, corporate media goes, you know, the piece on Gage. Why, and which you acknowledge, that the very seldom when they do include it, it's, you know, 99% ridicule. Can you place that, you know, from your professional background, can you lay that out for me?
Two words, stigma and brand. I think media outlets, when you say corporate media, you're basically talking about media that have a brand. You know, everyone knows, you know, when you say CNN, that's a brand. You turn on an airport television anywhere around the world, you're going to see CNN in one of the many languages in which it's broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
And so when CNN decides they're going to do a story, they have to say to themselves, is this a story that is going to affect our brand in a negative way? If we do a story on 9/11 Truth Movement, we do it sympathetically. Are the people at MSNBC and the people at Fox News then going to jump down our throats and say, CNN, you know, that's the network of conspiracy theorists?
Well, that's a very good point. But what you've also just said is that basically Wall Street and that form of, you know, hyper-capitalism is run by conspirating, you know, to make sure that, you know, it's immediate money and screw long-term. You know, I think you just kind of, you know, said something really important there, that, you know, it is. They're not going to put out something that is going to lose them dollars.
Yes. Well, I mean, from brand much everything these companies have, right? Because, you know, there's a lot of channels out there. People have lots of options. You turn to CNN because it's a network you trust. And the people making programming decisions at CNN have decided that they are not going to be able to maintain the trust of the tranche of viewers they want if they put on a certain kind of story.
Right.
Now, I should say that this isn't universal. You know, The Guardian newspaper in Britain, Toronto Star here in Canada. You know, there are scattered instances in which people have, when corporate media, so-called corporate media, have gone with this story. And Barry Zwicker has recorded some of those instances in his book, Towers of Deception.
Yeah, a fantastic read.
Yeah, and well, he's an interesting guy because he's focused. He's put a great deal of focus on the media and the response to it. He also has a publication in 2007 called Global Outlook, 9/11 Truth Media Breakthroughs.
Yeah,
which goes back to 2006 and 2007 and identifies instances in which the corporate media has highlighted the truth movement without, you know, when I say highlights the truth movement, I don't mean a passing reference to the kooks and oddballs who are questioning the official theory. I mean actual substantive articles.
Right.
So it does occasionally happen. But obviously I think it should happen more because otherwise I wouldn't be writing this book.
Yeah.
The book I'm writing is geared at what I think is an oversight. That I don't think mainstream media has covered this phenomenon. They haven't looked seriously at who these people are, even if it's only a social and a political phenomenon. Even if you disagree with it, I think it's an interesting political phenomenon.
Hmm.
And that's what the book's about. Every writer who writes a book is writing a book because they think they have something, that there's something other people have ignored.
Sure.
And that's why I decided to write this book, because I think mainstream media has ignored this story.
Right. Barry Zwicker is working on a book right now. Apparently it'll be the first time that, it certainly won't be complete, but the book will be based solely on previous false flag operations. That's a hell of a history book. And if I can jump back into the corporate, we're talking about, the brand of people that they want to attract. Sadly, what I find between, the largest mainstream media outlets, they all basically follow the officialdom, which is taught to children in school. It's carried on in university. It's in your newspaper, and it's on TV. And those who, take the time to, read independent authors, I think they're going to find, certainly I have, that the official version, officialdom, does not reflect actual history. And
well, yeah, it's interesting what you say about false flag operations. I'll admit, before I started investigating the 9/11 truth movement, I didn't know what a false flag operation was.
Right.
I didn't know what the expression was.
What is it? How would you define one?
False flag operation is a military terrorist operation conducted by a nation in order to falsely impute that action to another nation or group to provide a pretext for war or some other form of aggression.
Yeah.
And of course, the classic example was the Northwoods plot, right? Because
Operation Northwoods, right?
Yeah. Back in 1962, never went ahead with it, but there was a fairly detailed plan.
It was very similar to the 9/11 plan as well. Hijacking.
Well, so many truth movement members I met cited Northwoods as saying, when I read the Northwoods memo, which is a real historical document, right?
Yes.
It's unearthed about a decade ago. They cite the reading of that document as the moment when, for them, the light went on. And they say, okay, this isn't just crazy theorizing. You know, this was the Joint Chiefs of Staff back in the JFK era.
In 62,
and they
yeah.
wanted to actually do this. And I've actually written a part of the book where I talk about this sort of thing. And I make it clear that people who are members of the truth movement or related movements, they do have a point that false flag operations are effective for rallying support.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Gulf of Tonkin is a little blurrier example because people are still a little unsure what happened back then. But, you know, the Reichstag fire, Stalin knew the value of false flag operations better than anybody. He staged a couple, including the killing of Kirov, a Politburo member, in charge of St. Petersburg, and that launched the pretext for his Great Purge. So if you go throughout history, there's lots of examples that show false flag operations do work if you can pull them off. The problem is pulling them off.
Yeah. Well, the Spanish-American War is a good one. With the sinking of the Maine, of course, you know, the media pounded that. You know, that became the theme to get people to enlist. And the Gulf of Tonkin is very important. That was in 64, and that was basically to help launch the, full-on offensive of Vietnam, you know, which cost nearly 60,000 American soldiers and, you know, millions of civilians killed through, weapons of mass destruction, obviously.
Yeah, and another example that does not quite fit the definition of false flag,
okay,
but a lot of people cite it anyway in the same breath, is the Iraq War, where, you know, people will cite the fact that it was a war launched in order to find weapons of mass destruction. They weren't found. And also that most Americans, or at least many Americans, falsely believed that Saddam Hussein was behind the 9/11 attacks. And so there was an element of public misdirection, people will say, in regard to that war. So if you take all these historical examples together, this is the body of historical evidence that a lot of members of the 9/11 truth movement will point to, saying, look, this isn't crazy. This is a pattern in history. Like I said, I mean, I've emphasized this several points on the show. This is not something I find persuasive in regard to the 9/11 theories of 9/11 per se, but I do acknowledge that this is a pattern in history.
This
would hardly be the first time.
Okay, very nice. Returning to the Gage article and presentation, you made it sound as if your friend that you took with you, that you expected that she would be, I'm pretty sure it was a she, would be eyeball rolling, you know, meaning, oh my goodness. Was there anything in the Gage presentation that you just couldn't stomach and thought was far-fetched or, you know, unscientific?
Unscientific. The most impressive part of the Gage presentation, well, not the most impressive part, but the part that most people find most persuasive, is his material about WTC 7 falling. And if you talk to a lot of truthers, that is, for them, that's Exhibit A. You say, look at the video of WTC 7 falling, and doesn't that look like controlled demolition?
Yeah. Well, it does, and it did, and not only that, we have video footage of, I'm not too sure if it was a police or fire, but first responder, regardless, saying, get out of here, it's going to go, and then also hearing a countdown. you know, so it's more than just the video. There's audio to go along with that as well. But you're right, that is the biggest problem. You know, a lot of people don't know about Building 7, you know, a massive modern building that, it didn't turn quite powder the way the two Twin Towers did, but it was, you know, a perfect controlled demolition. And, you know, the media was made sure that, you know, on September 12th, it was never shown again.
That video segment, again, I think video, particularly web video, has been extremely critical to the growth of the 9/11 Truth Movement. And that particular snippet of video, taken from the north side of WTC 7, showing it collapse at 5:20 p.m., is a particularly effective means of recruitment for the 9/11 Truth Movement. A lot of times, I've asked people, says, well, when was it that you decided you were going to embrace this movement? And they cite watching that particular video as being a critical moment.
Yeah. Do you not also find a problem with the Twin Towers, claim that, basically what I want to say is that never has a steel frame building behaved remotely similar to what happened to the Twin Towers. That, to me, is a monster piece of evidence that can't be ignored, especially when you find thermite there, especially when you have hundreds. Graham McLean, one of the things that he did is went through the first responders' testimony and found, you know, many dozens of, you know, professionals in explosives saying, we heard explosions, you know, very specific, that, you know, they heard what they heard, and of course, it was explosions, which is what brought down the building.
Look, to give Graham McLean his due, he's done a lot of research. I think he went through something like 10,000 pages. And I think he did. I think the number he found was something like 118 out of the first responders. I think that's the number that Mr. McLean, Professor McLean, classified as saying things that related to explosions. There was a boom sound, or there was an explosive sound, or
I heard.
You know, this... If you do believe in the thermite hypothesis, that does provide, would seem to provide evidence. On the other hand, you know, each of those towers weighed half a billion pounds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, half a billion pounds of material falling to the ground makes a big noise. And so even if there were no explosives in that building, it shouldn't be that surprising that people who were within a couple hundred meters of those buildings falling would describe it as an explosion. Look, I drop a big book on the floor, I jump out of my seat, and it sounds like a gun going off.
Yeah, what? I'm carry on.
Yeah, but if you multiply that by, you know, a factor of a billion, and like I said, half a billion pounds of steel and concrete falling all at once, that sounds like an explosion to a lot of people.
Well, it sure does, but that's not fully accurate because the explosions were heard prior to the collapse of the building. So, you know, we can't... And they were very specific. You know, William Rodriguez, which I'm sure you're familiar with, makes that story very clear.
Yeah, going to William Rodriguez, I understand he's a brave individual and helped people on 9/11, but... You know, earlier in the show we talked about people who maybe weren't particularly reliable in the way they promoted the 9/11 truth movement. I think he's a guy, if you look at his record and what he said and the way he's promoted himself, I think you would have to admit that he is a guy who might be considered unreliable in terms of exactly what he saw and what he remembers.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, with the help of the Vancouver Truth community, I brought him to Nanaimo, put him up at the college, got 110 people for a small little town. That's fairly impressive. And I didn't pay him very much. As a matter of fact, he didn't even ask for any money.
I don't think he's in it for the money. In fact, you know, I haven't met... This is one thing that I am on the Truth Movement side. You know, sometimes people say, oh, they're in it for the money. What money? I mean... I haven't met a single member of the 9/11 Truth Movement who has made money from this. You know, even guys like Richard Gage. I mean, Richard Gage, hundreds of people will come out to see him. But, you know, he basically makes half the money he used to as a rank-and-file commercial architect. The only guy who maybe there might be some credible accusation that he's making a lot of money out of it might be Alex Jones, because he's got a popular radio show in the States, which is picked up by a lot of stations, and...
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, even he, you know, Michael Rupert, I interviewed him in L.A. a few weeks ago. This is a guy who sold 100,000 books.
Crossing the Rubicon?
I'm sorry?
With his Crossing the Rubicon?
Exactly, which came out a couple years ago. On the other hand, he also had to hire half a dozen researchers for his From the Wilderness website. And, you know, it was basically, at the end of the day, a break-even operation. So
right.
What you say about Rodriguez is well taken, since I don't think he or any of the other members of the 9/11 Truth Movement are in it for money. However,
yes.
he does, I think, I've never met him, never interviewed him, but from what I have heard, there are some there is some evidence that he might be promoting himself and being a narcissist.
Yes,
way to compromise.
I will agree with you to a small degree in that he told that story so many times, it became a little bit of a show.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, it did get polished as it went on, and I will grant you that, that, you know, it, he had done it many times, and he, you know, kind of knew where to emphasize certain ideas. So if that's where you're going, I agree with you.
And he's hardly, look, and he's, in fairness, he's not alone in that. There are a lot of people who have war stories from various times in their life, and they get so used to telling the stories that the stories do grow.
Yeah, well, you know, he was a media darling and was basically, from his story, you know, promised, you know, a pot of gold, and he couldn't live with himself, and, you know, he had to maintain what happened that day, what he heard, and he couldn't shut up about it. It was too important. So, you know,
yeah,
good for him. I don't want to take anything away from him. You know, his bravery that morning is beyond belief. No doubt about that. You know, he earned all the awards he was given.
Well, it must have been very traumatic for him. There's no question about that.
Yeah. Okay, let me see. In the Kevin Barrett interview, one of the points that you went into is that you feel that the truth community should present an alternative theory. Why is that so important, and what would that do for the truth movement?
Well, I think it's important for two reasons. One of them, principled, the other, practical. The principled reason is that the 9/11 truth community, the more intellectually rigorous elements within the 9/11 truth community, presents their theories as very much based on science and logic and deduction and rationality. In the Western scientific tradition, typically when you present a thesis which is scientific, one of the principles is that it should be falsifiable. So you say, here's my theory, and the evidence that I have is consistent with this theory, and in order to disprove this theory, you could show X, Y, and Z, but I don't think X, Y, and Z will happen, so that's why I believe my theory. If you have a theory that cannot be falsified, by the ordinary standards of Western truth-finding, scientific truth-finding, we typically dismiss those kinds of theories. So from a principled point of view, it would be interesting if the 9/11 truth movement or leaders within it said, look, here's my theory, here's what I believe happened on 9/11, and if you show this, that, or the other, it will demonstrate that my theory is false. The other, the more practical reason, and the more important reason, I think, if no member of the 9/11 truth community has asked me to give PR advice, so this is completely unsolicited, you know, when you try and get your story out there in the media, whether you're writing a book or you're trying to pitch a story to a television producer or write an op-ed for a newspaper, whatever, people want to hear a narrative. They don't want to hear 50 niggling details or questions or here's why I'm skeptical or, you know, look at this video and that doesn't look right. Ultimately, humans like hearing stories. I mean, this is why human interest stories work so well in the media, and this is why television in particular is so obsessed with human interest. It's why reality programming works. People love to hear stories. They don't want to hear bullet points. They don't want to hear, this is why I'm skeptical. They don't want this way. They said, look, tell me a story. Tell me what happened. And when I read, for instance, the books of David Ray Griffin, he's a very smart guy. I interviewed him for 3 hours. I found him quite really an engaging person. But his critique of the official story of 9/11, you know, it reads like an endless series of bullet points. You know, he's done a lot of research, and he's a good writer. But ultimately, you're left with, here's why I'm skeptical. Here's the 100 reasons why I'm skeptical.
Yeah, but I think you're missing the point. The 9/11 truth movement is, according to myself, to bring on a real investigation. So, you know, I mean, you're a lawyer yourself, and I disagree with, you know, bringing up a round story. No, we have evidence to suggest that a crime was committed. You know, we're going to go to court to find out what happened, not to come in, you know, because then the media would be able to say, these guys really are conspiracy theorists. You know, because I don't know what happened, and I've never suggested that I do know what happened. I just know that the official story falls apart almost everywhere I look.
But then, okay, well, if I'm... your average American or Canadian, I'm scratching my head and said, in terms of an investigation, you know, we spent millions and millions, or the U.S. government did. Now, they had to be dragged kicking and screaming to do it. You know, it famously took 441 days, I think, or 411 days.
411, yeah.
411 days before Bush finally gave the go-ahead for the 9/11 commission. But after all the kicking and screaming was done, they had, you know, they had a commission with pretty broad powers. And yes, you know, certain corners were cut in terms of how people were interviewed and what kind of evidence was given by the CIA and the ability to interview 9/11 Al-Qaeda suspects who were under detention at the time, most notably, of course, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. But at the end of the day, people who read the 9/11 Commission report, I think most people were fairly satisfied that they'd done a lot of work and that you had Democrats on it and you had Republicans on it.
I disagree with you, and there's no difference between Democrats and Republicans in reality. You know, that's just a facade that's painted to pretend that we have a democracy, and we don't. And, you know,
can we talk about that point? Because sometimes that's taken for granted. A lot of 9/11 truthers I talk to take it for granted that, oh, well, there's no difference between Democrats and Republicans. But do you honestly think that Democrats, who are in a very tribal political system, because Democrats and Republicans, even if it's for perfectly cynical, self-aggrandizing reasons, they snipe each other constantly. If they had the smoking gun about how a Republican administration and elements therein had done this horrible crime against Americans, you don't think that Democrats would be shouting it from the rooftops?
No, I don't. No, because they have their career to lose.
Excuse me. Sorry. Say that again? Their careers?
They would have their career sacrificed. For example, Cynthia McKinney, a good example. You know, they did a lot of nasty things to make sure that she didn't she wasn't elected to Congress again.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, Cynthia McKinney, you know, she's a rebel, and I think she might still be in Israeli prison right now because of her rebellious streak.
I'm not too sure what you mean by a rebel. I think that a politician that looks after what they're supposed to, you know, if we're a representative democracy, shouldn't our politicians care a little bit about the people that put them there and, you know, the average American and Canadian citizens, which I don't see happening at all in Canada or in the States.
But if you're thinking about your career as a politician, wouldn't the best way to make a name for yourself, to advance your career, to become a superstar in the eyes of Americans, be to blow the lid off the greatest crime ever committed in human history?
Yeah, well, it doesn't work that way, and we both know that. That's not the way the game of politics
is. No, but I don't know that. You know, if you look at Woodward and Bernstein, and they're journalists and not politicians, but they're heroes. And they're heroes because they blew the lid off Watergate.
Yeah.
You know, we live in a society that venerates whistleblowers.
I'm sorry, I really disagree with you.
Well, why are Woodward and Bernstein heroes then? Tell me that.
Why isn't David Ray Griffin a hero? You know, I mean, the amount of falsities he's by the Bush administration over the 9/11 lie is endless. He keeps writing a new book every year on a new subject. I mean, it's just so frustrating that, I don't know. You know, I really don't agree with, you know, there's officialdom and then there's reality. And I just can't accept what I hear on the TV and in the newspapers as...
Well, you're right about Woodward, because some of Woodward's books, recent books, have been quite psychophantic, so you've got a good point there.
Yeah. Okay.
But I'm talking as a journalist, because the culture of journalism is, you know, you want a scoop. You want to blow the lid off stuff. So you're telling me that politicians and power figures don't follow the same, or don't have the same motivation. They're more conservative by temperament.
I'm saying they know where the bread is buttered. I'm saying it's about greed, and it takes a certain type of person to become a politician. You know, and they have to their morals have to be crossed very early if they're going to succeed as a career politician.
Well, one of the interesting things that I have come across in the 9/11 Truth Movement is there is a lot of cynicism about politicians.
And deservedly so, yeah.
I mean, I assume that once Obama was elected, that you know, that people would assume that if Obama didn't authorize another investigation, then, you know, then that must mean that there's nothing to investigate. But
yeah.
It's actually surprised me how as you said, there's a lot of people who really don't see much difference between the two political parties. And I guess it sounds like you're one of them, but we're talking here in Canada, but it sounds like looking on the United States, you believe that they're pretty much the same.
Well, yes, I do. Now, let's extend this to the secret societies, which aren't that secret, but, you know, I'm talking about, you know, the Bilderbergers, the Council on Foreign Relations, those type of secret societies that I believe are the ones who choose the presidents. And, you know, then the people get to vote for Frick or Fack, but, you know, it's a big scam, man, is what I believe personally. And
can I ask you a question about the Bilderbergers?
Sure.
Did you read Daniel Estulin's book?
Yes, I have.
Okay, and what was your opinion of that book?
What was my opinion of it?
Yeah.
Well, it was well respected in, I think, every circle that I've found it located in. I've never come across someone that said, don't read this. It's whatever it is.
Because I mean, I found it an interesting book. I can't believe the Bilderbergers are that powerful.
Well, sure they are. They're the elite class. They're the wealthiest people. You know, like another example is that capitalism is not about competition. In reality, capitalism is about monopoly, and they're the guys at the top of the monopoly.
Yeah, that's one of Estulin's theses. He sort of brings the circle around, and he says, look, monopoly capitalism and Soviet-style socialism are essentially one and the same because they're both about monopolizing power,
yes,
just in different ways.
Yeah, and I think that that's a fair thing to say. John,
but ultimately, ultimately, though, that is, I mean, I guess it shouldn't surprise me that so many people in the 9/11 truth movement believe that, because I guess ultimately that is the guiding view that power is everything, and that political partisanship and ideology are really secondary.
Yeah.
And that what people really want is power, and they'll do anything to protect that.
Well, it seems like what it comes down to is that, you know, you're suggesting that the government are too big a screw-up, so that they're incompetent, that they couldn't pull off a false flag operation, where we can also go back and read some of the quotes by former, you know, presidents. I think it was Woodrow Wilson who basically said, nothing happens by accident.
Yeah.
You know, and there are so many quotes, you know, from these elitists, you know, these people that are wealthy enough to be, you know, members of these secret societies. You read their quotes, and, you know, eventually most of them got honest. And they said some very specific things on how the world works.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that, I mean, this is, it wasn't, you know, not just Wilson, but there are various famous people have said. I think Disraeli also.
Yes, that's right.
Something.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, it is a recurring theme, and including a recurring theme from people who actually have been in the halls of power. So that's, I suppose, that's not to be sneered at.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank
you for acknowledging that. However, can I ask you to hold on for 1 minute, maybe wet your whistle? I have to run a couple ads here as part of, the contract of me having this show. Can you wait a second? I would love to continue speaking with you if that's...
Sure.
I'd also like to thank you for staying up late. You're back east. It's getting pretty late for you, and I do want to acknowledge that and thank you for your time.
No, it's my pleasure.
Okay, so if you can just stay on the line, and I'll be with you in 1 minute. Thank you very much. We are listening to Jonathan Kay, journalist with the National Post. He's writing a book due out next year called The 9/11 Truth Movement... Among the Truthers, Alternate Theories of 9/11 and the People Who Believe Them. So we will be back very shortly to continue and conclude our conversation with Kay.
Or you can email us at keepmusiclive90@hotmail.com.
Hi, we're not on air right now. Can you go a little while longer, or are you cool with it?
Yeah, I can go.
Okay, very nice. Back to the city. I can go about to 9.
Welcome to Buffalo.
Okay, very nice. Of course, you are listening to CHLY at 101.7 FM from downtown Nanaimo, Central Vancouver Island. I am your host, Raymond Geisler, with the Unbought and Unbossed show. It is a very special show today. It's the first time that I've had a fellow brave enough to come on this show who does believe the official story of 9/11. And welcome back to the show, Jonathan Kay.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for holding on. I had a little bit of business I had to take care of. The station manager is in the building, so he gave me the stern finger and said, you've got some things to do at 9 o'clock. So there we are. Now, I'm actually forgetting the exact point where we left off there. We were talking about elites, political and financial leaders of the past that have said some remarkable things about, you know, that the way society is portrayed isn't really the way it works. Is that where we were going? Are we finished with that? Did you want to add to it?
We were talking a little bit about the Bilderbergers, which, you know, again, this is one of these interesting things where I had no idea who the Bilderberg group even was before I started researching 9/11. Or maybe I'd heard of it a little bit because Conrad Black was active in the Bilderberg group, and of course he was the original owner of the National Post. But it was really when I started researching this book, so many people I talked to started talking about the Bilderberg Group, Council on Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission, you know, all these groups that a lot of people don't really give much thought to, because who really thinks about, you know, these multinational toss shops? But they really are a focus for people who are concerned that the real strings of power are being pulled by people behind closed doors.
Yeah, that seems to, now you're finding a hard time believing that, or where are you sitting with that?
Well, the reason, this goes to what we were talking about before. The reason I'm very skeptical is because I just don't see most politicians, most intellectuals, even most business leaders. Which is basically the three groups of people who tend to attend at Bilderberg functions and at CFR and these other elite groups, they're just not very good at conspiracies. And as a journalist, I've just witnessed so much incompetence in people trying much more basic conspiracies. You know, like Silvio Berlusconi right now in Italy is having trouble because, you know, he couldn't even get his love life in order.
Now, is that the fellow that basically owns all Italian media?
Yeah, he owns all Italian media, and he still hasn't been able to cover up his sexual shenanigans. And again, an example I talked about before, Paul Wolfowitz, who, of course, is a figure who's very central to a lot of 9/11 truth theories because his position within the Bush administration during Bush's two terms. You know, he's a guy who couldn't even conspire to get his girlfriend a job at the World Bank. So this is basically the reason I'm so skeptical of any theory about world events or large crimes being perpetrated by conspiracies. Not necessarily because I think that people are saints, or especially people who are in power. I think people like Stalin prove they're not. It's just so difficult to pull these things off without people finding out. Look at things like Enron and all sorts of corporate scandals. It's just the truth eventually does seem to get out.
Well, the truth of Enron is that financial elites did in fact conspire to rip people off and try to fudge their documents. Is that not the end of the story?
But they got caught. They got caught. I guess I'm looking at 9/11 and saying it's been almost eight years now.
Yep.
By this time, I guess, maybe it's because I'm a writer and I like writing books, and I think to myself, the people involved in this crime, so many of them must feel guilty. How come they haven't written books? How come they haven't moved to New Zealand and said, I'm gonna confess to the world what I did?
Mm.
Which, I guess if they did that, then that would break the story as the 9/11 Truth Movement sees it wide open. Until that happens.
Well, I think that's already been done. In particular, Patriots Question 9/11 is a website that has many, I don't know the number right now, of former and present military persons, with expertise in very specific areas that they have, in numerous cases said the official story doesn't wash, and, their own little expert from their own field. So, is that not a whistleblower?
Well, it's a whistleblower. I mean, you're absolutely right. There's no shortage of pilots of people who are in U.S. intelligence services, military men and women. These are people, who salute the flag or in uniform, but I think to really, if you really want to get a majority of North Americans on board, you need someone who is actually involved in it. Because then, this goes back to something we were talking about before, then you have your narrative. Then he says, this is how it happened. X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
We did this, we did this, we did this, we did this. And that's, as I said, that's what people respond to.
Sure.
They respond to narratives.
Okay, let's
not, not just... Sorry, go ahead.
Let's come back to Canada for a second here. And one of the things that came out of 9/11 was the Security and Prosperity Partnership. I don't think you're... the National Post covers that very well, if at all. Has it ever been covered by the National Post, this secret agreement,
well,
which
sure.
is basically kind of a corporatocracy taking over democracy, and they're doing it in such a way that it doesn't have to go through parliaments. You know, it's an agreement by, the major corporations, part of it, the major corporations from Mexico, the States, and Canada, and it just shows you... how close we are to if you want to take Mussolini's definition of fascism, it's corporatism, and that's who's running the show. And I'm sad to say that Can West, where you get your paycheck from, is one of those 10 for Canada, and we got a bit of a problem here.
Yeah, I think the SPP, as it's usually abbreviated, I think it was 2005, and... this is basically an extension of free trade. If you think free trade is part of a program to advance corporate power, then yes, I guess it falls under that same heading. Of course, there's also a security component to the SPP. Obviously that was something that was motivated by 9/11.
Yeah, so Canada is basically going to be foregoing its own... sovereignty in, well, basically most every issue, certainly security as well as financial. That is a huge loss, do you not think, based on, the 9/11 with it, as many problems as it has, and all of a sudden they're bringing in other things? I mean, doesn't it seem like something's at work here, that it's just not incompetence? I mean, to me, it seems like they know exactly what they're doing, and they are full steam on track. I don't see any incompetence whatsoever. As a matter of fact, I see money continuing to go to the top. I see the poor getting poorer. It's really unfortunate.
Look, this is part of a larger debate. This is part of a debate about globalization and free trade. And, I don't know if you've had Professor Anthony Hall on your show.
I have.
But this is part of, he is professor of globalization studies, right?
Yes.
And this is how he got into the 9/11 truth movement, through exactly the avenue you're talking about here.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people who think that free trade agreements and things like the SPP are part of a deliberate, sinister program to deliver power to corporations. I don't share that view. I think free trade has benefited a lot of ordinary working people.
For real? No, you're serious. I want to make sure. I disagree with you wholeheartedly. I think Canadians and Americans are in far worse conditions. Our jobs are overseas. BC in particular, extremely wealthy in natural resources. We own none of them anymore. They're all leased out to, primarily foreign corporations. I really strongly disagree that free trade has done anything for the average person in the first world or the third world.
I mean, maybe, you educate me. You're out in B.C., and from where I sit, B.C. is doing pretty well. I mean, it's not as if your province is owned lock, stock, and barrel by the Americans. There's a lot of, it's a fairly rich province. Mining, forestry, fisheries, most of it is owned locally. I think... the free trade taps into some of the same anxieties and some of the same legitimate concerns as any globalization movement, because people fear that they are going to become prey for the Americans and other international investors. I don't think that has happened in Canada yet, and I also don't think it's fair to look at the SPP, which was negotiated, after all, by Paul Martin.
In secret, that's just more to say that, there's been three prime ministers since 9/11, and they've all had the exact same, my mouth is shut, response. You know, there's no difference between them.
Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
When they talk, when American truthers talk about there being not much difference between the Republicans and the Democrats, do you share that view in regard to liberals and conservatives here in Canada?
100%. 100%. There's no difference. And who was the fellow that crossed the floor from Emerson? He was a liberal who, because of the SPP, he was one of the senior people putting, you know, basically the theft of our government. He was a key person there, so the conservatives took him on so he could continue doing what he was doing. There's no difference. And that to me is proof, or, well, certainly a strong piece of evidence.
But one of the corollaries to come out of that is the notion that it's not worth expending much political energy as between the conservatives and the liberals. And I mean, I guess that is a defensible position if you really believe that the two parties are the same. But I'm guessing that you and most of your callers do care who's in power. I do sometimes think that there's a conflict between the idea that all these parties are the same with the reality that I'm guessing even someone like you really does care who's in office. I mean, surely you don't subscribe to the view that there's no difference between the liberals and conservatives.
I do vote, and yes, I wish we had a democracy that went the way they pretend it did. And I'm frustrated that it isn't, and that's part of the reason why I got this show. You know, I didn't come from a political background on this show, and I didn't come from a broadcasting or journalism background either. I was a literature student in university. Then I went to become a teacher, and while I was in teacher training college, I started talking publicly about 9/11. I went from near the top of my class to mysteriously being such a doofus that that I was not going to graduate from that university as a teacher. So, you know, you talked about sacrifice a little bit earlier. This is pretty personal for me.
What year was this?
3 years ago now.
Well, look, I mean, this is interesting to me because, you know, then you're Kevin Barrett and...
Kevin Ryan?
Yeah, well, Kevin Ryan, of course, was... I mean, he had a corporate job, and then and he got terminated from that.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a handful of people. Although this is one thing that's interesting, the phenomenon is interesting to me, because there are also, just by the luck of the draw, there are examples of people who, particularly academics, who have come out with their affiliation with the truth movement and have not paid any price just because of the environment they happen to be in. And Paul Zarenko was down in Buffalo.
Yeah, he's a professor out of Buffalo, that's right. Likewise, another one would be Peter Dale Scott out of California.
And sometimes tenure professor just protects these people. It doesn't always protect them. You know, I think that Stephen Jones might have had tenure at BYU. But it depends on the environment people are in. And I guess when we're going full circle here, back to my motivations for writing the book, the fact that people would make these sacrifices is one of the things that made me interested, because it's very easy to strike radical postures when you don't have to pay a price for it. But people have paid a price for it, and in your case, it sounds like you're one of those people.
Well, I'm not sorry that I did. I've met some of the most wonderful people in the truth community. You know, to me, I would call them heroes. They are very brave. They're doing their best to inform themselves. As you've already mentioned, they are you know, very polite and well wishers. And so on. Just one sec. Please leave the booth. Okay. Thank you. I just had a note handed to me. So I'm very honored to be a member of the truth community, and I hold it very dear to my heart. And I make sure on my show that I don't say things that I wish I could take back. You know, I don't want to. You know, when I first became a truther, you know, I was very frustrated. Like, why can't you guys, you know, realize really quickly that there's problems in the story? And you know, I was, you know, kind of full of energy and you know, kind of on the soapbox thing. And I realized that that's not the way to persuade people to look at something that is difficult for them to look at. And
well, I appreciate the rational approach. I've enjoyed our conversation.
Yeah. I'm a little bit concerned, if I may be honest about what I fear might be here, and I certainly hope that I'm not correct, and I'm just putting this idea out. I can't prove it. I'm afraid this might be the case. Do you mind if I?
Well, go ahead.
Carry on, and because you are a very unique person in a position that, as far as I know, the only person to be in that situation. Unfortunately, Ken West, who you work for, I don't feel that they have Canadian needs at hand, and I suspect that your role perhaps would be to convince the newspaper buying public by saying, well, you know, basically that, you know, you have looked at the 9/11 truth evidence, you find it, you know, quite interesting, but yet you continue to believe the official story. So it seems to me that you're basically saying, you know, don't worry, everyone, I've checked this out, and their conspiracy theories don't wash. Do you have a comment for that?
Look, I make no presumption that I'm in any way doing this book on behalf of Ken West or on behalf of journalists. This is just me. In fact, when I asked Richard Gage a question in Montreal, I got up and said, I'm a writer with the National Post. I'm not here as a representative of the National Post. I'm just one guy who's writing a book. That's the nice thing about One nice thing about the 9/11 Truth Movement is that it's all out there on the web. Anyone who wants to write about it can write about it. I happen to be one guy writing about it. You know, Barry Zwicker is another Canadian, and he's been writing about it for a lot longer than me, from a different perspective.
Yeah.
And you know what? The fact that I happen to have a newspaper job doesn't make me a special person in the eyes of the people who have been reading this book. We now live in an age when, you know, people, even if they don't have newspaper jobs, they can go out and they can write blogs, they can write books, they can have internet radio shows. You're an example of someone who just had a message for the world and went out and just got a radio show. So the privileged position that print journalists working for the corporate media once had, maybe as recently as 10 years ago, is gone. And the use of the internet, the 9/11 Truth Movement, has exhibited is Exhibit A on how that's happened.
Yeah.
So
it's
know,
made people very cynical, though. You know, they're finding out the dark history that isn't written in, you know, college textbooks. You know, there's a lot more to history than is being presented to us. And due to that, you know, so many of us are cynical. You know, and unfortunately, I'm sometimes cynical from what the truth I've come to believe. And if I can extend on my comment there, that it seems to me possible that, you know, the senior people at Can West might have said, we got a special job for you, and there will be great reward later. I
guarantee that's not the case. In fact, if anything, they probably, if I had to guess, I haven't spoken with anyone at Can West about this, but big companies tend to be risk averse, and they, the safest assignment I could take to protect my career if I wanted to write a book is I'd write a biography of some retired prime minister or something. I'd go write a biography of Paul Martin or something. And, you know, it would put me in good stead with Power Corporation and whatnot.
Yeah.
But writing about controversial subjects is usually not good business for big corporations. But that said, no one at Can West has tried to stop me. But trust me, I'm writing this on my own initiative because I'm interested in it. I'm not offended that you asked this question, but I can guarantee unequivocally that this is me writing the book. If you do like the book, I'm the one who gets the credit. If you don't like the book, I'm the one who gets the blame. I take responsibility for the contents. This is not a corporate gig. And I'm not writing it for any publishing house affiliated with Can West. I'm writing it for HarperCollins Canada.
Yeah.
So.
Fair enough, and thank you for taking that well.
I said, look, hey, it's, when you go on a radio show, you got to be prepared for any question. And I don't take these things seriously. I do take it seriously. I don't take it personally is what I meant to say.
Okay, good.
I appreciate your spirit of inquiry. I'm afraid I have to go. It's 12:30 here on the East Coast.
Yes, it is. Well, thank you. I'm looking forward to reading your book, and I got quite a few emails from people saying, give him a chance, because he is bringing some 9/11 truth perspectives to the people who don't get them often. And so, you know, for that, I want to thank you, and I hope you continue. And there we are, Jonathan.
Well, thank you for having me, and good night to you and all your listeners.
Very well. Take care, partner.
Yeah, bye.
Goodbye. Well, 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 well. Wasn't that something? That was Jonathan Kay with the National Post. That might have been the first time that someone who claims to believe the official story has spoken publicly to a truther, a 9/11 truther. And I thought that that went quite well. I'm sure that there's things that I wish to say that I didn't. Hopefully I didn't say anything that I wished I hadn't said. And so I hope you enjoyed that. That was interesting. Jonathan seemed to accept a kind of a lot of things that the truthers present as credible. Well, we got a phone call. Why don't we carry on? And I'm sure someone will be wanting to talk about this interview. So, okay, that phone call didn't go through. If you do want to call, that would be fine. We're at area code 250-740-1017. If you want to make a comment on the the Jonathan Kay. And I have another message. We're live at 10. Okay, so, yeah, we're going to have some live music coming up next. The following hour is still a blank hour. So I'm not too sure. They haven't told me what it is other than you got to get out of here at 10. Hey, they're calling back again. Let's see who it is. CHLY, you're on the air.
All right, this is Anna from Gabriela.
Anna from Gabriela,
oh,
how are you doing?
Oh, man, I was riveted. I was watching you on my computer.
Okay, yeah.
I was riveted to the whole Jonathan Kay interview. It
good.
Was wonderful. You did really a good job.
Oh, thank
I was like giving you hints, like, oh, tell this, tell that, do this, say this. and you came through shining, and he was really good too.
Yes.
And it was very, very interesting. Very interesting.
Well, he conceded to a lot of points that you know, that I'm not just blowing hot air up here. You know. So you know, good for him.
Yeah.
I don't.
And I really liked the when you brought in the Bilderbergers and all that stuff. That was really, really cool.
Yeah.
That was really cool. I still don't believe him though about the conspiracy thing. You know how people can't hold a secret and all that stuff.
Yes.
I don't believe that at all.
I agree with you.
You know, I really don't believe that at all. Like all these presidents are bought and bossed.
It seems to be.
And if you give people enough money. And you threaten them and threaten their standing and their families, they're going to toe the line, man.
Yeah.
They're not going to say nothing.
Yeah.
You know, like basically, like, look at Barack Obama, man. Look at Betrayer Obama.
Right.
Over there, you know.
One of the things I wish I had mentioned to Jonathan, it would have been the next point,
yeah.
Was concerning when he was at the Richard Gage event. Richard Gage asked people before and after the presentation.
Yeah, and he was the only one.
And he was the only one, and that's very telling. Because
yeah.
Personally, when I have presented some of the problems in the official 9/11 story, I have never come across one who, after hearing some of these problems that can be backed up with, you know, photographs, facts,
yeah.
audio pieces,
yeah.
that they don't go, oh, maybe there is a problem.
Exactly.
But yet it appears that Jonathan...
The only thing I would say, and it's only a minor point here, but just to say about the other high-rise buildings that burned, had fires in them and burned for like hours and hours and didn't come down.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's really telling as far as I'm concerned.
That is a problem.
Know? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, and I'm hoping that I'm going to get some other phone calls.
Okay. All right.
Thanks for calling in.
Kudos, man.
Right on.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, there we are. That was Anna from Gabriela. She has been a co-host a couple times on this show. Not recently, though, so we'll have to get Anna back in the studio one of these days. A very passionate lady, so thanks for calling in. Anyone else want to call in? You have an opinion on this rather historic telephone interview here in Canada with the journalist Jonathan Kay. He's also a lawyer, and a little bit awkward. Journalists and lawyers are, well, quite often not looked on with a lot of respect and praise in our society, and I'm not, I don't know exactly know what I'm saying, but I think you know what I'm trying to say. So, what I'll do is I'll just, I'm waiting for the phone to ring, is what I'm waiting for. Anyone have a comment on the Jonathan Kay interview? Area code 250-740-1017. This is the Unbought and Unbossed show on CHLY. Of course, we're at 101.7 FM on the radio dial. We're also online on the internet. Go to chly.ca. We have a new way to listen online, and there's in the same place, in the top right corner of the homepage, there is a Listen Now. I got a phone call coming in, so let's take that. Hello, caller. Welcome to the Unbought and Unbossed show.
Yo, how are you doing?
I'm good. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
I'm still my phone from Denman.
From Vernon?
Denman.
Denman, okay. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, it's exactly the same case as a lot of people where, you know, on the West Coast here, it may be more common to find people who are not necessarily buying the version of the mass media or the government.
So we're more progressive here on the West Coast, is what you're saying?
Well, it has partially to do with it. But when you start wondering, well, who believes in that shit? Who actually believes the lies that these guys are coming up with? And you know, you may go travel and you may find people who have voted for Bush twice and who still believe that, you know, Saddam Hussein had sent up the 911.
Right.
But the thing is, at the end of the day, this is the age of information. If people aren't convinced yet, or if people haven't made up their own mind, it's because they just don't want to not believe. You know, they just can't conceive that the government would do that. That they go to work, they you know, do everything that they do, and that at the end of the day, they have been let down and lied to. People don't want to believe that. You want to wake up, go to work, make money, pay taxes, vote, support your government, and hope that, yeah, these guys are watching out for me. And day in, day out, life goes on, and people are just not going to buy into it until they,
Well, you know, the mass media and our government certainly make it difficult for us to get a deeper truth of what's going on. They seem to be doing their best to make sure that we're not informed.
Well, you know, as much as during your interview, you know, you were talking about Exhibit A being the Building 7.
Yes.
I still think that no plane hit the Pentagon, and that is very clear. And if people can't make up their own mind, this is such a clear fact. Like, the story of the plane hitting the Pentagon, that just doesn't stand. So what else do people... Like, there is no fuselage, there is no plane. That hole is tiny.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, there's not one aspect of the official story, to me, that I think rings true.
So if people are not willing to look at all these facts and take that position, it's clearly because they don't want to let go. They don't want to let go of what they're living for and they live for and their forefathers and grandfathers. And you know, it's crazy. The military tradition, people, you know, because the father or grandfather fought in war, they're going to say, you know, I want to follow in that lineage. And the show continues. It's just we are fortunate to be on the coast here and to be able to talk about this on radio and not necessarily come across as being crazy.
Right, yeah, you're right. We're very fortunate that we have freedom of speech still, and I'm going to guess in a few short coming years it might not be as easy as that.
Yeah, definitely true. And you know, that's why you got to get, you know, different free radios and different stations and, of course, the internet and different ways of communicating and keeping this up, so... Yeah, so anyways, that's my thing. So thanks for putting the time and the effort.
Yes, of course, you're very welcome, and thank you for calling in.
Yeah, sure.
Good day, sir. Okay, very nice. I still have, oh, heck, about 15 minutes before I got to get out of the studio here. So I'd love to hear from someone else. Maybe you're listening online. As I was telling you, we have a new way to listen to CHLY online. It's in the top right box. And what does it say? Listen now, I think, and it takes us to a new something or other. I haven't quite worked out all the way, but that is our new system. Hopefully, we'll be able to host many more people listening online at once than we were in the past. There is another phone call. Very nice. Let's get to that. Hello, welcome to Unbought and Unbossed.
Hey, Raymond, it's Wayne Pronte.
Wayne Pronte, hi, thanks for calling, buddy.
Hey, congratulations, great job.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm pretty happy with how that went.
Yes, indeed. And my hat is off to him, too, for coming on your show.
Hell yeah, yeah.
For speaking openly and honestly, and I think probably to the best of his ability, I think he's kind of stuck in his old mindset. But generally, I thought he was he was being as open as he could be and fairly fair. I mean, obviously, I disagree with a lot of points that he made, but no, my hat's off to him for doing the show for sure. You know,
that's right.
I thought you asked a lot of the right questions and just did an excellent job there.
Yeah. Well, it was really something because I got a lot of emails over the last couple of weeks since I've been, advertising that Jonathan's going to be coming on, and I got some people, kind of giving me pointers on how to deal with, which, perhaps might be kind of a corporate spy working for, deceptive
right.
means, which I kind of alluded to at the end. And I've also gotten people on the other side saying, take it easy on him. He is getting 9/11 truth out, so to speak. So it's an interesting balance and...
Yeah. Well, I can understand those fears because, I mean, we have seen so many hit pieces being done. It's ridiculous by people that, started off sounding as though they are going to take an honest look at things and then turned around and just did a, major hit piece on it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's happened, so many times. It's like the chances of getting a fair piece in the mainstream is, slim and none, which is basically why I always say just leave the mainstream alone and focus on the alternative so-called alternative media, because
as well as doing your best to become the media.
Right.
Yes.
Right. As well as that. And, but also that the fact that a lot of people have turned off and tuned out the mainstream media as it is. So why run after them?
Yeah.
That there's other places to get information, and you tell people about those places where you can get good information as alternatives. So that's been my philosophy for quite some time.
Yeah, it's interesting. If I can butt in real quick here, the National Post, the national paper, one of two in Canada. Here is down to 4 days a week. They're down to five. Anyways, they're not doing a Monday publication anymore. Their numbers are down, and I would like to think that it has nothing to do with the recession. $1.50 a paper, I don't think is the big deal. I think the big deal is that people are wisening up and knowing that they can't go to corporate media to get an accurate view of reality.
Well, that's it. I mean, that's been reported widely over the last half a year or so that Ken West was in big financial problems and, looking for a bailout from the government, because their subscriptions were down, their advertising revenues were way down, and so on. And I don't think that's just symptomatic of the economy. I think people still want information. They're just no longer trusting those traditional sources, as you say on your intro,
Yeah.
And so, I think it is still, advantageous for us, when we do occasionally see, these reports coming out in mainstream media that we do, send in some comments and so on. Sometimes we have to tone it down a little bit from what our, what we want to say in the bottom of our guts. But it looks better on us when we can just point to the facts instead of with emotion,
Yeah.
And there's just so many facts and anomalies that refute the official story. It's crazy. So and the one thing I noticed that I didn't hear him really come out with anything at all to support the official story as to why he believes it is still credible.
And
his main thing seemed to be that is he can't get over the idea of people conspiring to do nastiness because basically they're too incompetent to keep things quiet.
Right, and yet we've had these admissions from, you know, going back to, I think it was Truman you mentioned, or was it...
Wilson, I believe.
Wilson, yeah. And you know, Smedley, Butler, and so many people all the way on down the line and through Kissinger, through the Rockefellers, that have come out with their own admissions of what they're doing,
yeah.
You know. And I think it's a you know, he's still rather naive in the sense that, you know, to think that all of these, you know, politicians, whether in Canada or in the States, particularly in the States, are not beholden to people who lobby and donate funds and who are also, you know, being blackmailed. I mean, that's pretty well known, too, that, you know, they will you know, keep tabs on these people, and if they've had indiscretions or something, that's on the, you know, they've got notes on these people, and if they don't vote a certain way, you know, they're going to get disclosed, you know, these things. So, you know, there is fear and intimidation and blackmail going on, you know. In the halls of these, you know, of Congress and so on. And as far as Canada goes, I mean, it's absolutely ludicrous to think that there's a dime's worth of difference between liberals and conservatives, because we've had the same agenda, the same policy going forward since 9/11 took place.
Exactly.
With no opposition, no matter who was sitting in the government row, who was sitting in on the opposition side, it was the same tune with no opposition.
Yeah.
Basically not. No. Other than, you know, maybe some peripheral issues here and there, and indeed the, you know, very little from the people that you would expect it, which is the NDP.
Yeah.
So. Yeah,
that's right. Actually, last week I had Kevin Annett and Lori O'Rourke, and we had an in-depth discussion on, you know, the kind of the faux left,
yeah.
You know, if that's
yeah.
the NDP, and, you know, they're not doing their job as even, you know, an opposition party.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it's a circus. It's a three-ring circus, basically, you know. And so for him to pretend that that's not going on, to turn a blind eye and pretend, oh, we still have this democracy, and yes, there is a big difference between these guys. It's just, my God, he's still got a lot of, you know, he really doesn't have his eyes open. It's good that he's taking the time, though, to go around to various parts of North America and talk to people, sit down with them, and get to know these people. And so, you know, like I said, I commend him for that. It sounds like he is going to, you know, report honestly on, at least on the people who are involved, you know.
Right, right.
You know, so that's a good thing.
Good point. I hope that he does make room to explain, you know, the people that he is going to do, you know, a little showcase on, that he does present the ideas that they're trying to get out about, you know, the problems in the 9/11 story. If he didn't do that, there'd be a real problem. How can you talk about a group of people, but yet not talk about what they talk about?
Yeah, it's strange. I was interested in, you know, what exactly is his tactic. I missed the first few minutes. I was having a hard time getting on there, but so I like listened to the first few minutes of it. But
right.
But generally, no, very well done, my friend.
Okay, well, very nice. Now, I'm going to shut us off now, but however, I'm hoping to have you on next week, and we're going to take an in-depth look at the false flag flu, you're calling it. Is that still a go?
That's still a go, and if I can, I'll try and get my friend Joel on as well.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, very nice.
We may have to, you know, do it at separate times, but he'll have some more information about the legal aspects of it, of the flu vaccination thing. Yeah.
Oh, okay, well, we'll talk during the week, and we'll set things up, and we'll put a show together for next week.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, have brother. Take care, partner.
Bye-bye.
Okay, there we are. That's Wayne Pronte with Fraser Valley, 9/11 Truth, as well as War Criminals Out. He's a regular guest on the show, and he's going to be on next week to talk about this H1N1 issue. Wait, is that another phone call? I think it is. Yes, it is. Let's take another phone call, shall we? All right, welcome to Unbought and Unbossed.
Hello, Raymond. It's Doug Brinkman from Edmonton 9/11.
Doug, how you doing, brother?
Oh, what a great show, man.
Oh,
what
thank
a great
you.
Show. You did a wonderful job with the interview, and it was a real pleasure to have someone outside of the 9/11 Truth movement to come on the air and attempt to defend some of the reasons why they believe that the official story counts.
Yeah, that was a real treat.
Yeah. I just wanted to point out a couple things here, and I'll be real quick so I can give other callers a chance.
Okay.
You know, he talked about Woodward and the Seymours, the big journalists out there that have broken big stories, the big scoops.
Yeah.
And interesting, earlier in the debate or the interview there, he also talked a lot about the corporate brand and how corporations have to protect that brand.
That was interesting,
and,
wasn't it?
Yes. So as many journalists that are out there wanting to come up with the big stories, I'm sure that first and foremost they have to be careful with what they come up with.
Yeah, if it doesn't fit within that brand, exactly, we got a problem.
That's right. I mean, bottom line is in Canada we've got three or four major corporations that are running the media. And they are all suffering right now due to the economy. They are still suffering, including CanWest. And they really have to watch their P's and Q's and what they print. And I think, I think Jonathan pointed out, and I think you know this, I think a lot of us know this, that with politicians, they're a little bit nervous about talking about this stuff because, hey, it could be their political career. And in respects to corporation media, they got to be very careful what they talk about and what they print in newspapers because, hey, it could cost them subscriptions. It could cost them marring the brand name. And I think he pointed that out clearly, that mainstream media has the first and foremost responsibility to protecting that brand name. So going out on the limb and coming out with those big scoop stories, I don't think are going to happen as easily in today's marketplace with newspapers the way they are. And I'm glad that he's writing a book about the 9/11 truth movement, but I wish he would really try to debate and maybe focus on some of the arguments that some very prominent people in the 9/11 truth movement have presented.
That's right.
And you know, like, take on and debate that stuff.
Yeah.
And write a book about that, why we're wrong about this stuff.
Yeah. I want to make it very clear to him that I would take offense if he treated the entire 9/11 truth movement as, kind of the fringe. And I wanted to make it very clear that is not the truth community that I know and love so much, you know, that you're a part of. We're kind of mainstream. I mean, and that's one of the things we have to be careful that we don't say goofy things. You know, that we do want to stick to things that are as provable as possible. And
you're so right on that. I think it's so important that the 9/11 truth movement. We have to be very careful about the integrity of this movement, and it has been a concern of mine that in the last few months that you know we really have to be careful with what we talk about when we're doing activism and when we're doing civil information, and that there is a lot of fringe stuff out there, and some of that fringe stuff ought not to be out there during activism. It ought not to be out there during civil information. We really should stick with the facts, with the information that we got, try not to mar and uphold the integrity of this very, very important movement.
That's right. Doug Brinkman of Edmonton 9/11 Truth, I want to thank you very much for the phone call. I'm going to have to shut her down now. I've got some people waiting to come into the studio.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you, and take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, there we are, friends. I'm going to put on a tune. We're going to have something special coming on next. Okay, there we go. All right, friends, this has been the Unbought and Unbossed Show on CHLY. Of course, 101.7 FM, chly.ca if you want to go online. You can email me at RaymondTruthRadio@hotmail.com. That's RaymondTruthRadio@hotmail.com. My website, where you can listen to previous shows and find out the specifics of what was on, is unbossed.livejournal.com. Unbossed.livejournal.com. Okay, I'm going to send you away with the song. Be well, everyone. See you next week.